Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Samuel Adams Returns, those anti-federalists, they absolutely got it right. This is your host, Tom Mavolis, and I am so delighted to be back with you live this week. We took the Easter week off, and I hope you enjoyed the rerun if you didn't get a chance to listen to it. It was one of our programs that we did way back in 2015, and I thought that it was very appropriate for the time. One of the things that, or events, not just a thing, but an event that was celebrated last week, and in addition to Easter, was that of what happened on April 19th in American history, that being Lexington and Concord. And there were a lot of good stories out there about that, but also, it wasn't just about going after the powder and the arms. It was intelligence, actually. The first reason was the intelligence that General Gage received that Sam Adams and several of his other friends were there. The notorious Sam Adams was there in Lexington, and that he possibly could be captured. So one of the ideas was to go out and capture Samuel Adams. And wow, what a prize that would be. In fact, General Gage said that this evening I will have Samuel Adams shackled at my table. So he thought that it was just going to be an easy go out there and take it on. But as we know, the riders got there ahead of him, Paul Revere being one, and let Sam Adams and John Hancock know that the British were on their way. And that Sam Adams and Hancock, as they were making their way through the woods, when that shot was fired, Sam Adams actually looked up to heaven and said, "Lord, now it begins." And he knew exactly what was to happen. Very interesting, interesting time. So I just wanted to let you think about that. And there's more to it and much more history that I've posted about that in the past. And I don't know that I'm going to repost anything on it, but you know, there was a lot of good historical speeches and talking about it and people that want to rile things up, bring that to bear. Well, what are we doing this week? Well, I have to tell you, the depth of this week is going to be on one of my constant diatribes and frustrations. It's going to be in such a way that I came upon a couple of interesting articles, and one of them is from 1913. 1913. You see, I do read the moderns from time to time. Well, with that from 1913, ladies and gentlemen, this was written in Christianity and Culture as part of the Princeton Theological Review, Volume 11, 1913. I'm going to be talking about this article and something that, yeah, a real modern writer, a couple statements that a guy by the name of Gary DeMar had made back in March of this year. But the important part is that, as I always say, there's nothing new under the sun. So in the first and second segment, this is what I will be covering. The first and third segments. I try and split them up a little bit more. So it's going to be the first and third segment that I talk about this Christianity and Culture. And this is by a J. Gresham Machen. And he lived between 1881 and 1937. So very interesting read. Second segment is where I am going to focus on the techno-oligarchs and a solution for you. A solution that you can have right now, right today, to take and preserve your liberty. I am going to be talking today about how Eagle Fire soars over the tech oligarchs, and that it's everything you do online the way you want it to be, your own personal data and control connected and shared on your terms, messaging. You know, you don't have to go through all that other text messaging. Anyway, we'll get into that in the second segment, because there's a book out there that I'll talk a little bit about called The Age of Surveillance Capitalism. And that's going to be the real core of the second segment, as then I talk about how the Eagle Fire Post soars above all of that. So let's get to it. Let's get into this whole piece of, oh, in the third segment, I'll have a little bit of a surprise for you. I'm going to take and play a add on after the third segment. It'll be on video only because I don't know how to split things up in timing to put it into the audio. So there is a big conference that's happening in Lima, Ohio at the end of July. And I will take and get more information. It's obviously in the promo. It's in the bottom of the video and it's in the archives with more information about that conference. And you could get a hold of Dr. Mike Spaulding as well. And I'll give all of that information at the end of the video that'll be up on YouTube and in the archives of SamuelAdamsReturns.net. So let's get to this whole point on Christianity and culture, in that evangelicals help or have helped to lose this nation. Are you hearing me clearly? Evangelicals have helped to lose this nation. Oh, Tom, no, you know, we got all these guys out there. We're preaching a good preaching and we're, you know, we're preaching. We're just preaching the gospel. I've heard that. I've heard that at a megachurch here in Northeast Ohio. We preach the gospel and the whole gospel and nothing but the gospel. Really? Wow. You know, we've heard that from pastors. We've seen it in the critics of social and political action, how Christians that are active in culture, in politics, in those aspects that should be under the authorship of Christ are really lambasted for doing that. And it's all about the gospel and grace only. And, you know, that it's, wow, what's up with that? Anyway, I just could go into so many different things on that diatribe. But what I want to do is focus on, and the link to the PDF is at SamuelAdamsReturns.net for the archive for today, so you can get for yourself Christianity and Culture by J. Gresham Machen. He says, one of the greatest problems that have agitated the church is the problem of the relations between knowledge and piety, between culture and Christianity. The problem has appeared, first of all, in the presence of two tendencies in the church, the scientific or the academic tendency, what may be called the practical tendency. We have men that devote themselves, you know, to trivial things. We have men that devote themselves to this idea of, oh, I got to be the smartest, got to be intelligent, got to be all of this. And instead, they miss the real fact and truth of the gospel. And even in this article, he talks about the fact that, you know, some of the brainiacs in the cemeteries or some of the brainiacs that are even in the churches, they don't really have Christ within them. They're brainiacs. And then on the other hand, there's all of these others that are into the emotionalism. They're into the whole side of the gospel only to the extent that they don't take into consideration all that God has created, what I always call the extensibility of the gospel. They don't take that into account. And they withdraw, as much as the intellectuals withdraw from the gospel truth and hide themselves in their intellectual empires, be it in the church offices or in the context of the church, so too are the gospel-only ministers hiding themselves in the churches and not being engaged in all of God's creation. So that's kind of like a snapshot of what this article gets into and how both sides of the intellectual and the emotional are taken and represented within the whole of the church. And that the real issue comes down to, what are they missing? What is it that they're missing? And how is it that faith has to take its place, and how we pay attention to that, and how is it in our lives, and what is the proper relationship that it should be? Well, this author takes and he comes into a perspective of two different ideas. He goes through the whole discussion of the scientific ideas of education. What does that mean? And that, unfortunately, even in the schools of theology, for the most part, that it went to the scientific side. It went to the side on how to render this, how to do that, how to do this. But as I have experienced from many people, many friends of mine who've gone to the standard cemeteries or Christian schools and all of that, that they take and they have no idea what it means to participate in all of culture, in all of history, in all of what we're supposed to do. Some of what he really started to stress on here is that the problem may be settled in one of three ways. In the first place, Christianity may be subordinate to culture. So that's one idea, and we've seen a lot of that. And now that we're seeing so many churches that they're subordinate because they don't get involved. They do nothing about culture, or they let in all of the tolerance insanity. They let in all of these things that are perverting and subverting everything that is in the true gospel. The second idea is way opposite, way extreme. I mean, it could go to the point of where there are those that are called, the theonomists, or what is that around trying to implement Christianity in a theocratic manner. Well, that's extreme. That's not how it works. That's not how the gospel works. And it's such an extreme that, you know, it requires refutation. We're just not going to get there. That's just not how I think that God has established how we do things, especially within the context of our gospel system. And he just really gets into a great discussion of the practicality of understanding all that God has given us, has all created us in. And then he talks about this third solution. The third solution are that then the Christianity and culture, they are in conflict. We're seeing that. And we're seeing it in this modern time. So there's nothing new under the sun. This was something that was seen from the 1800s, as I've talked about so many other times, to this being discussed in 1913. And what he talks about here is that there is this possibility of this third solution, namely consecration. Instead of destroying the arts and the sciences or being indifferent to them, let us cultivate them with all the enthusiasm of the veriest humanist, but at the same time, consecrate them to serve our God. Instead of stifling the pleasures afforded by the acquisition of knowledge or the appreciation of what is beautiful, let us accept these pleasures as the gifts of the Heavenly Father. Instead of obliterating them and trying to make that distinction between kingdom and the world, you know, we need to understand that all of it was given to us by God. It was created. And that man can only have this, he can only hold what is true. And in the third segment, we're going to talk about what he discusses, which is absolutely a fact now, is that there are so many who do not believe that Christianity is true. It's a nice thing, it's a nice idea out there. And even what we're seeing in so many of the different churches and what we are now calling the liberal denominations is that they're tolerating the evil in such a way that they think they are going to do what? That they're going to institute the kingdom on earth. Well, you can't do that because that's a form of socialism that does not work. And we know it doesn't work because of all of those areas that we know socialism doesn't work. So utopianism, as Sam Adams said, is not constitutional, and that was under the English form of a loose constitution, and it's even more so in our constitutional republic. So that's very, very interesting. So all of these proponents that are pushing for socialism and all these grand ideas, they are enemies of our Constitution by its own written intent. But more so, they're enemies of God. And we're going to talk about it in the third segment, and we'll come back with more of Samuel Adams Returns, The Anti-Federalists Got It Right. And most interestingly, there's nothing new under the sun, as we can tell from this Princeton article in 1913. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Samuel Adams Returns, the Anti-Federalists. They did get it right. And they talked about all of the various things. And you've heard me speak on this program, and you have seen the blog post that I have put up about what the Anti-Federalists said the government would get into based on a constitution not led by a moral and virtuous people. You can't see this on the radio, but I'm looking around and my phone, I have to take and maybe go get a hammer and smash it with a hammer so that they can't hear me. They can't see me. Oh, the electricity's on. The smart meter. Oh no, what's going on? What can they hear? What can they see? What can they say? A few weeks ago, my dad was over and Kathy was standing at the front window and they were having a conversation about our beautiful multicolored green grass. Well, only a portion of it, about a third of it, was actual grass. The rest of it is moss. And Kathy's been doing a fabulous job of eradicating the moss. But while they're having this conversation about the moss, Kathy's phone dings. Mind you, they're having a conversation. The phone is in her pocket. And the phone dings. She pulls the phone out. And as you see me pulling my phone out, on her phone is a push ad for moss eradication. Interesting. Interesting. So as you see in the links that were in the promo and in the YouTube and what's on SamuelAdamsReturns.net, there's a review of a book in TheFederalist.com called The Age of Surveillance Capitalism. So when we look at the Googles, Doogles, Woogles, the full books, or is that a Facebook? Well, if you look in it, you know, you may be a fool for still being on Facebook. And the Twitters, Ditters, and Critters, what you get is exactly what we're talking about, is that you, my friends, are a commodity. You are nothing more than a commodity. Everything about you, all the way down to the color of your underwear, which is exactly what the Anti-Federalists said, that leave it to itself under this federal constitution without protecting our rights and our privacy, called the Fourth Amendment. I know, it's search and seizures, but you have a right to privacy. But guess what? Yes, you can be surveilled by private companies to the extent, as the Anti-Federalists said, ladies, they will know what is in your boudoir. Men, they will know what you drink in your wine cellars. Yes, meet surveillance capitalism, our terrifying new economic order. You need to read this article. If I don't get to some of the other articles, because I definitely want to talk to you about Eagle Fire and how it soars above everything else, is that this article should take and light your fire to want your digital independence. Ladies and gentlemen, we're at war right now, and the war is not just a cultural war that I started talking about in the first segment, and that of Christianity, which I'll continue in the third segment in talking about what that means, and from an article in 1913. But this on surveillance capitalism is that advanced technology. Here, this Harvard professor wrote this book, is a fight for, it's called, let me go to the whole title for you, The Age of Surveillance Capitalism, The Fight for a Human Future at the New Frontier of Power. And he's warning about Silicon Valley amassing your data so artificial intelligence, AI, used for going after our external enemies, I think is a good thing. AI the way that it's being used here is evil. Evil. Okay? So what he's talking about is just how this advanced technology is being accumulated all through the Google Schmoogles, your smartphones, everything else. Surveillance capitalism renders human behavior by trafficking, measuring, or excuse me, renders human behavior by tracking, measuring, and analyzing from your smartphone to your smart home, from browsing the internet to private messages or emails with a colleague. This relatively new dominant force intrudes through cookies and privacy permissions that in most cases must be accepted for all the service to work properly or at all, including, for example, many smart home security systems. Interesting. You can't do anything without them surveilling you beyond the surveillance system that you bought to protect your house. So this professor distinguishes surveillance capitalism at the outset from information capitalism, whereas information capitalism makes money from information you provide. Surveillance capitalism disguises itself in intimidating terms of service agreements, which nobody reads. Do you read the service agreement when you accept an app on your phone, or when you download a new computer program, or when you take and you sign up to buy some? You should check out Amazon's terms and services. Their service agreement for you to buy on Amazon. Folks on the radio, I just stuck the hook in my mouth and drug my face across the American flag to show you how we've been tranched. Okay, so this disguises itself in intimidating terms of service agreements and actually nudges your behavior so that you do what it wants in various ways, perpetuating a feedback loop of predatory control and emotional espionage enabled through advanced machine learning and algorithmic programming. Get this. Global revenues for AI products and services expected to increase 56-fold from $644 million in 2016 to a staggering $36 billion by 2025. So, what do you do? Well, you go read the article. You look at, none of this is science fiction. Just real quick, a couple other articles. A report here, Google manually manipulates search results to exclude conservative sites. That was April 10th. And on Breitbart, there's another one on Breitbart about Facebook continues censorship against populist website political ideas, or the website Politicalite. Ladies and gentlemen, the whole idea is that they don't want you to have that because they want to manipulate you in a certain direction. And interestingly enough, I'm going to get into all the cultural aspects of it, but when we look at all the insanities that are going on, look at the people that have become citizens, but in fact, they have not become Americans, because they come from cultures and religious backgrounds that are not what our founder intended or our founders intended. So let me leave you with that. How much time do I have? About 7 minutes? 6 minutes? 6 minutes. So let's talk about the eagle sores. The eagle sores being eagle fire. Eagle fire, I happen to be a principal in this company, and I'm going to give you this idea here. Eagle fire is everything you do online the way you want it to be done. Your own personal data and control, connect and share it on your terms. You own it. You determine how everything works, the messaging and all. So Eagle Fire is a personal data hosting service and suite of essential online services owned and managed by you. You own it. Okay, it's built on the Matrix Open Protocol standard for secure decentralized communication. You get online independence, your own web address, and you get some gigabits of storage all included in the cost. Ladies and gentlemen, I cannot tell you how important it is to the reality, in fact, that you can run high-grade encryption on your text messaging, on how you communicate with others, how you build your own rooms and only invite those in who you want to participate with you. Connect and speak, free to speak. You're free to speak as you please. So there's no control. You manage your own censorship if you want that, or you have your own free conversation. Eagle Fire empowers you to host and control your own online services and use them anywhere. Three apps connect your services and empower you to do your own secure direct messaging and social networking, create a big community of followers, make audio and video calls, store and share files, photos, videos, and much more on your terms. Even your contacts and calendars are 100% under your control and ownership while accessing them through the native apps on your smartphone, your smartwatch, or your PC, or your device. So the only messaging network service you need, your own network, decentralized and giving you full control over your posts and messages. Eagle Fire makes having your own messaging network easy. You can use the message badge to tell your friends how to connect and directly message you. And there it is in at the website, SamuelAdamsReturns.net. You'll see a badge that I have there for at TN for Liberty, and that will allow you to click on there and try the messaging environment to connect to me and connect on to Eagle Fire so that we can have a conversation and see what it's all about, give you a chance to take a look at it. Since it's your network on your hosted service, you can always access it on any device to message and go do direct group and audio and video calls. Unlike the centralized messaging and social networks, your messages and network are private and free from arbitrary content rules and exposure to massive security breaches. You know what? It's precise. It's yours. It is your whole private environment. You can take and do all sorts of things, and you can encrypt it. Very high level of military-grade encryption if you want to be encrypted with others that you communicate with. We have some major institutions that are coming on board with this, that are using it, individuals, some educators, student leadership groups. I'm telling you, this is your own proprietary social network, messaging apps, and a cloud service, but not the big old cloud service. It's yours that you control, okay? And you get a powerful set of office suites supporting major documents, spreadsheets, presentation file formats. It's always available to you. Yeah, is this an advertisement? You bet it is. Over 200 million people use this daily of our core elements, and they're there. You know, you can get all the layouts, everything that you need to participate in having your own hosted virtual private server. It's exclusive to you. You own it. And you can determine the right amount of information, the right amount of storage you need. Eagle Fire includes a personalized domain name, automatic backups, the secure socket layer, and military grade protection. 24/7, 365 monitoring. Anyway, it's yours. You want your sovereignty back? You want your digital sovereignty back? Or do you want to take and be locked into much of what's happening in that intelligence, that surveillance economy? Start breaking away from it. Start doing something different. Start soaring with Eagle Fire, and check it out at SamuelAdamsReturns.net and at where the other links are that we have. And Sam Adams is the man of liberty, and the anti-federalists, they got it right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this third segment of Samuel Adams Returns, those anti-federalists. They did. They absolutely got it right. And the important thing that I want you to know is that it is critical to understand that Christianity in America is once again having exactly the same problems that it was having in 1913. And a lot of it comes right down to one of the simple ideas is that what's believable? What do you believe? What is truth? What do you believe in truth? What do others believe to be true? So we're going to go back to this Christianity and culture, and there's just no way that I'm going to be able to cover everything in here because it's pretty, I mean, it's not a big article. It's only like 8-page article, but the point of it is that it really points back to not just what's in the cemeteries, what's not just in the pulpits themselves, but it's in the combination of the two. And it takes it even to that larger extent of one of my other diatribes, as you've heard them, is that the universities. The universities are the cesspools of anti-Christian activity. And now they're the cesspools of anti-American activity. So in this article, we want to continue a little bit, trying to give you, encapsulate it, is that the Christian cannot be satisfied so long as any human activity is either opposed to Christianity or out of all connection with Christianity. Now, unfortunately, there are many that have a theology that wants them to be rooftop Christians, and they want to sit there because they're waiting for the special forces, you know, Jesus return helicopter to come and whisk them away. So they are not engaged in anything other than trying to figure out how their own souls might be saved or how to deal with their emotional problems or whatever it is. Okay, in other words, they're introspective. All they see is what's in the four walls of their church, their little congregation, their buddies, and they have no idea, or they choose not to, and the leadership within the churches choose not to engage in the reality of everything that God owns and created, and the fact of the reality that it is already under his footstool. And so, as he brings out here, and these are his words, and he's talking about, is that we need to take and understand that if our position is correct, we ought to at least be able to show the other man, that means the man that's an anti-Christian, that his reasons for not believing may be inconclusive. And that involves careful study of both sides of the question. Furthermore, the field of Christianity is the world. Stop with that alone. The field of Christianity isn't just, you know, the little souls running around, the humanoids that need Christ. It is the whole world. That means it is culture, it is education, it is science, it is those that are drug addicted, those that have mental health issues, it is the politics and the bureaucracies that, yes, pastors, I don't care where you are, whether you're the mega churches here in Northeast Ohio or you're the super mega church in Texas or Oklahoma or wherever, or even the smaller church, you know, you're responsible. You're responsible for people being prepared to interact in every aspect of God's world and the extensibility of the gospel in every aspect of life. So he continues on here, the Christian therefore cannot be indifferent to any branch of earnest human endeavor. It must all be brought into some relation to the gospel. It must be studied either in order to be demonstrated as false, or else in order to be made useful in advancing the kingdom of God. The kingdom must be advanced not merely extensively, but also intensively. The church must seek to conquer not merely every man for Christ, but also the whole of man. So he goes on to talk about that, some of which I've already summarized in so many different ways. One of the things that I like to talk about is, and he brings out here, so as Christians, we should try to mold the thought of the world in such a way as to make the acceptance of Christianity something more than a logical absurdity. The way we approach things so many times is that's exactly what we've done. We've just put it in that perspective of absurdity. He talks about the professions are becoming so overcrowded. He's talking about an excuse for what's happening in the churches and Christianity is people work too much, they're too wealthy, all of these different things, and he talks it about as an excuse. He says that the real difficulty amounts to this, that the thought of the day, as it makes itself most strongly felt in the universities, but from them spreads inevitably to the masses of the people, is profoundly opposed to Christianity, or at least what is nearly as bad, it is out of all connection with Christianity. So that's what's happened in the universities. Look, here it is. Harvard, Yale, Princeton, all of those were Christian universities. Now, Harvard, Princeton, Yale, what do? They are spewing anti-Christian and anti-American sentiment. Everything except for a little smidgen and all the other universities, major universities, even the Christian, the Catholic. All these universities are doing what? They have taken and saying Christianity is absurd, and the beliefs are so absurd. Well, I'm running out of time. Here we go. So here's something that he brings out, and he says this. The church has no right to be so absorbed in helping the individual that she forgets the world. That means forgets that need to be in everything. He talks about two objections to this idea of Christianity being involved, and what does it mean in being involved in that whole cultural and Christianity issue. In the first place, will not Christianity destroy culture? And they go through these questions. He says, no, God created everything. And when everything, Paul talks about it, it's there. Everything, Jesus, everything comes into submission to God. It's not destroyed. It's made better. It's made better. So Christians, pastors, teach your people to be involved in everything, because guess what? They were created with talents and giftings that God wants them to use in the world for his glory, to bring those under his submission. Second question is, will not the culture destroy Christianity? So you have so many that fear that you shut yourselves up in an intellectual monastery. You do not disturb yourselves with the thought of unregenerated men. And of course, you will find it easier to be a Christian, just as easy it is to be a good soldier in a comfortable winter quarters that is on the field of battle, but not involved in the battle. And you let the enemy take the battlefield. That's it. You're out there. You save your own soul. But the Lord's enemies remain in possession of the field. Boy, I'm coming down to the last 5 minutes. he talks about in here is what happened in the universities, and that how unqualified scholars, those that don't have the heart for Christ, that are not regenerated, are the ones that are running the universities, are the ones that are leading education, are the ones that then are perverting all of society. And hey, pastors, teachers, cemetery leaders, you know what? You're the ones that have been allowing it. You have allowed it to happen. And that's what he talks about. And he goes in here and talking about that, you know, but they are not accomplishing the great task, these teachers, these men. They are not assimilating modern thought into Christianity because they are without that experience of God's power in the soul, which is of the essence of Christianity. Modern thought they know, but Christianity is really foreign to them. During the last 30 years, he's talking about in 1913, is that has been a tremendous defection from the Christian church. It is evident in a number of different things, and the decline is in how many are attending church, who's involved in actual Sabbath observances, and the number of people that want to go into the ministry. I've talked about many times what happened in the 1800s, 1880s in particular, when it comes to church history. There's so much more that I want to get into, and I'm running out of time. And what we look at is that with these intellectuals, what's going on is that it really comes down to, it's not always an intellectual difficulty, because we're supposed to be intellectual, Christian intellectuals. You know, Cody Libet's out there with a great group on Christian, the new Christian intellectual. It also comes down to the simple reality of indifference, apathy. It prevents Christianity even from getting a hearing. So the gospel's ignored, Christians are ignored, and that's exactly the same thing now when it comes to the truth in the political arena, founders' original intent, and what our constitutional republic is all about. It's ignored and won't even get a hearing inside the university. So it's gone, pastors, teachers, from Christianity not getting the hearing to the whole idea of any thought that is derived from Christian principles for good governance does not even get a hearing. So let's see, we battle in the culture. Modern culture is a tremendous force. It affects all classes of society in the first place. The church may simply withdraw from the conflict, which is what's happened again. That's exactly what's been going on is, yep, you're withdrawn. And I know that for a fact of a megachurch up here in Northeast Ohio. They've withdrawn from being involved in the culture. There's still some men out there who are unaffected by it, but for the most part, you know what? People aren't involved. So let's see, the church is abandoning the Bible to her enemies even because of scientific method, the universities, and substituting all of the other things that are anti-Christian for solid biblical truth. It's called tolerance. So the churches are substituting true biblical truth for tolerance, which Sam Adams fought against. So we have a battleground, we have an enemy, and they are in the world, but we have to fight. He finishes this up with saying that, preachers, you need to avoid this whole nonsense. And what you need to do is you need to preach every Sunday during your seminary courses, devote your time to study and to thought, to study about everything you can, and then you need to be able to preach it in a very, very solid way. You got to be able to reverse what's going on. It's a reformation within the churches. It's a reformation of the universities. It's a reformation of the country. So when I started out, how have they lost the nation? They've lost the nation even back before, 30 years before 1913. And then what's occurred up through and to today? What's the solution? Get out there. Pastors, get involved. And then come on back next week to hear more from Samuel Adams and those anti-federalists, because they predicted exactly where we are when you don't have moral and virtuous people.